fun over. I ain't gonna quit your pretty mama while the weather's cold. Around your back door, honey, I'm gonna creep, just as long as you bring me 2½ a week. I've got a girl, she works in the white folks' yard. She brings me meal, I swear she brings me love. She brings me meal, honey, she brings me lard. She brings me everything, honey, that a girl can steal. Lord of Vaudeville Circus, right of King's Town. They got the dancers looking nice and brown. They didn't know it was against the law for the monkeys to stop at a 5 cent store. Well, just around the corner, just a minute too late, another one standing at the big back gate. I'm simply wild about my good cocaine. I stood my corner, hey, hey.
Have I mentioned this is an awesome video on YouTube?
I have not heard you say that lately.
It's an awesome video on YouTube, everybody. Dig Justice Cocaine on YouTube. Check it out. It's Morning Vinny's show. It's January 5th. We're already in 2011. We've almost been doing this show for 6 years, Vinny.
And here we are.
We're back, everybody. We actually have a packed show today. I'm not wasting any time. We've got Dragon Gate USA pay-per-view, which airs this coming Friday night, I believe. More information at dgusa.tv. We're going to talk about that here and talk about Ring of Honor from Monday night. We're going to talk briefly about Raw and briefly about SmackDown. I have thoughts on both of those shows. And we've got a special feature we're going to be doing the show today. And if it goes well, who knows, we might do it more often. It's called the Brian and Vinny Caller Lightning Round. You see this on the board, Vinny?
No, this is new to me.
Well, here's what happened. So we do the prediction show every year. And that's where folks call in, and they give me their predictions for the next year. And then I go back through the predictions from last year, and I make fun of people for how stupid they were. For example, Crumbly, who thought that Impact was going to do a 2 by the time Bound for Glory rolled around. That was laughable.
Maybe he meant total over a 2-week span.
Nope. 2. Hmm. Actually, to be honest, Impact did hit a 1-4 shortly after he made that prediction, but never came close again. But anyway, so I was doing that show, and quite frankly, it sucked. And it sucked for a lot of different reasons, but one of the reasons it sucked was I'm not used to doing shows by myself. I've always got a guest on, or I've got you, or Craig, for example. I've not done a solo show in a long time, so I was rusty. And also, I had some issues. It's very hard to do a call-in show when you've only got one line, because when you only have one line, when you're on that line, no one else can call in.
It's not like you have a series of callers on hold.
No. So you've got to take a call, and then you've got to hang up, and you've got to try to waste a little time in a creative manner, whether mm-hmm. that be perhaps reading some things from last year or just bumbling on like a goddamn fool. And then the next call comes in, and you take it, and so on and so forth. So this really threw me off my game. So what I did was I set it up today where we now have 3 lines, believe it or not. So I want to bring back the show that we used to do once a week. We used to do a mailbag call-in open lines show, where for an hour, I would just open up the phone lines. Unscreened open lines, as the great Art Bell used to do on his program all the time. Unscreened open lines, maybe some emails as well. And I did this, but again, I was by myself. I only had one line. Sometimes they didn't have good questions in the email or on the board. Made the show really difficult and stressful for me. So basically, now that I've got 3 lines, I think I can do these call-in shows, these open line shows, pretty easily. Now, I didn't want to bring it back this coming Friday and have it be a disaster. So I figured I may as well test it out on a show that's usually a disaster anyway. So we're going to talk about Dragon Gate USA, ROH, Raw, and SmackDown. And then for the final 15 minutes of this show, and I'm going to set the timer, for 15 minutes, I'm going to take unscreened calls, you and I, to test everything out and see how the whole thing goes. And I anticipate some gremlins, and hopefully some of the people listening that work in radio and have similar equipment to what I have, maybe they'll be able to pinpoint the issues, why these gremlins are coming up. But it should be an interesting time, and who knows? If it goes well, we may do it on the weeks where we don't have shout-outs, such as tonight. So that is the plan for this program here today, everybody. And we're going to see how it goes. You ready to take calls, Vinny?
I am ready.
Well, we're not doing them now. We're doing them at the end of the show.
Oh.
A rhetorical question. I want to start with Dragon Gate USA because not only did we just watch the show, but I had a revelation when I was watching this show.
I can't imagine what it would be.
Oh, yeah. I had a hell of a revelation, actually. I've been watching a lot of these shows, and I didn't like this one as well as I liked the last one. I really liked the last Dragon Gate USA show. This one, I thought, was a good show. It was easy to watch. I didn't give anything, I don't think, less than 3 stars. I think the lowest rating I gave anything was 3 stars. There was nothing I gave 4 stars to. It was like, every match was between 3 and 3.75 stars, which is fine. Nothing wrong with that whatsoever. But I had a revelation when watching the main event. Talked about this for a long time. The Dragon Gate USA main events featuring the wrestlers from Dragon Gate, I'm never that high on. You know?
Mm-hmm.
Seems to happen all the time.
The main event of Dragon Gate pay-per-views is almost never the best match on the show.
Like, my favorite match on this show was the 6-man.
Yes.
My second favorite match, like as far as like personal favorite match, I can not like a match, but recognize that it's a 3.5-star effort. You know what I mean?
Sure.
I'm not one of those guys that I
Actually,
see
that's
a match.
That's how I feel about Dragon Gate as a whole, basically, but go ahead.
But for example, the opener, I've been a huge fan lately of Jimmy Jacobs. I think he's fucking great. And his match with Eric Cannon, I only gave it 3 stars. It was the lowest rated match on the show. But the only reason I did so was because it was only like maybe 6 minutes long. I didn't time it. But it was like by far the shortest match on the show. But I have a feeling that if it would have went longer, I would have rated it significantly higher. And anyway, long story short, with Dragon Gate USA, you get all sorts of different kind of matches. And one of them that you get is a singles match featuring talent from the Japanese version of Dragon Gate. Not a Jimmy Jacobs, Eric Cannon. You know, they worked a very traditional style of match. I mean, obviously, there were modern high-impact moves and that sort of thing, but it was like Jimmy Jacobs ran wild against a large heel. The large heel cut him off and beat the shit out of him. Jimmy Jacobs made a big comeback. He won decisively, and then he cut a promo about how someday he's going to be the champion. Fucking great! I loved it. Then we had, like, for example, the 2 matches involving the guys from Dragon Gate in Japan. We had Akira. Actually, what was the match that we had? First off,
this was the tag match was next.
That's right. We had the tag match next. And then where was the singles match?
Shingo and Shima?
Yeah, Shingo and Shima. That's right. We had Shingo and Shima. And then at the end, we had the Yamato Masato Yoshino match. And both of them, and many of the matches I've watched in the past, the Dragon Gate main events, I thought to myself, why is there no psychology in this match? Why, for example, is this guy working over this guy's leg for 8 straight minutes, and then 2 minutes later, that guy's making a comeback, and he's not selling his leg at all? You know what I mean?
Oh, I do.
Okay. Well, it always bothered me until I watched the main event tonight, and I had a revelation. Are you ready for this?
Break it down.
All right. Now, I will preface this by saying, I'll preface this by saying that there was an article in the Washington Post today about Lucha, and I read it, and there were things in it that were kind of infuriating in the sense that they interviewed, like, college professors, and whenever you interview a college professor and ask them about wrestling, it's always bullshit, because it's a great deal of overthinking something that is actually really simple. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
That's what we had in this thing here. And maybe I'm doing that here, but I felt that this was a genius revelation that I made. Singles matches featuring the Japanese Dragon Gate USA stars are recreations of video games performed by human beings.
I agree.
And I'll tell you why. I
don't think it's a compliment, but I agree.
No, but I finally figured this out here. And kind of, I don't know if it's a compliment. I don't really know what it really is. But people like Alan Forel, for example, and fans of Dragon Gate USA, to them, this is great. And maybe it's not my cup of tea, but to them, this is what they want to see in their singles matches. So more power to these guys. What it is these matches are not spot fests. Because to me, a spot fest is a whole bunch of high-flying and a whole bunch of high-impact moves all strung together with no rhyme or reason. That, to me, is a spot fest. Okay? They're not really lucha matches, because lucha matches involve, like, a lot of high-flying, and you don't usually see, like, the hard-hitting head-dropping suplexes and the big power slams and stuff like that, largely because these mats and these rings that they wrestle in Mexico, you'd kill people if you did stuff like this. In a video game, and granted I don't play a lot of them, but I have a general idea of how they work. In a video game, often they'll have like the pain meter. You know what I mean, Vinny?
Yes.
Where you beat a guy and his
health bar goes down.
His health bar goes down, exactly. So if for example, there was a video game character Brian and the video game character Vinny, and the Brian character worked over your leg for like 6 minutes, your health meter would go down dramatically, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, when you made your comeback in this game, if such a thing happened, which of course never would because I would be better than you, but if you did, it's not like you'd be selling your leg. You know what I mean?
It depends on the game, but you're great.
But basically, it would just be your health meter has been lowered by this damage, whatever it might be.
It depends on the game, but many games work that way. You are healthy, 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 and then dead.
Sure.
And that is a Dragon Gate match.
But when you... To me, once I accepted that... I was fine with these matches. Because usually when I review a match, I'm like looking at the story of the match. You know what I mean? I'm like looking at the story of Jimmy Jacobs and Eric Cannon, which is a very simple story that I can write about. When I'm writing about a Dragon Gate USA main event featuring the Dragon Gate guys, there's really no point in me doing that because
no.
It's really just it's God playing a video game with two human beings. And you get a lot of... The reason I compare it to a video game is because you're going to get some technical wrestling. You're going to get some mat wrestling. You're going to get some high flying. You're going to get a flippy-do. You're going to get a head drop. And you're going to get a bunch of hard slams. And in the end, somebody's going to win with one of their patented moves. That's what it is. And if you... To me, once I accepted that early on in this match, this match was, like, fun.
Okay. The thing, though, you're right in that... Usually, when you are playing a wrestling video game, you're going to make it a point to do every move your guy can do. But the key there is, when you're playing a video game, your goal is to entertain yourself. So, I guess what you accepted is that, for example, in the main event here, Yamato and Yoshino went out there with the goal to entertain themselves.
Well, no. The other thing is what we've talked about before in the past. I don't watch Dragon Gate except for these shows. And so, to the Dragon Gate audience, if you're a Dragon Gate fan, you're going to love the two singles matches on this show because they're playing the video game for you. You know all of their moves, you know all of their counters, you know the story of these moves and the counters and everything like that. I'll give you an example. In the match that involved Ricochet, my favorite wrestler, one of them, not anymore actually. I got another favorite wrestler on this show. But Ricochet, always in his matches, he does a spot where he does a round off and he ends up on the guy's shoulders, and then he turns into Hurricane Rana. And it's great. And, like, every Ricochet match I've seen in the last 6 months, he's done this spot. Well, he went for it here, and he got thwarted. And I was like, holy shit! Now, for your average Dragon Gate viewer, I'm sure they had a lot of holy shit moments in both of those matches. But for me, I have absolutely no idea, really, what all of these matches mean, and these finishers and everything like that. So when I watch it, to me, it is a video game. I'm watching God play a video game.
You're literally watching an exhibition of moves. See, I just saw... I felt, frankly, totally different than you about the show. I thought I saw the same match 6 times.
Well, you missed the opener. That doesn't count.
I did miss most of the opener. I did feel like it was... I felt like every match in this show, with the exception of the sixth man, which I did like, the rest of the matches in the show felt like what you just described as a spot fest. Just a series of moves with no logical point to them. Everyone would hit a big move, then immediately get cut off, and the other guy would, as you noted, completely act like he was not hurt. They would go at the exact same pace for 20 minutes, and after 20 minutes, someone would lose to a random move with nothing. Or would lose to a random move with no build. There was no build to anything. Therefore, there was nothing to anticipate or look forward to. Therefore, there was no reason to get excited when something finally did happen. So, I say this every time. I've seen enough shitty wrestling to know this is not shitty wrestling. It's just not for me. So if you like it, great. I don't like it.
Jimmy Jacobs and Eric Cannon, again, you missed this match. This would have fit in on any ROH show on the undercard. It was the little man versus the big man. They did a very basic opening match, but it was a lot of fun. Jimmy Jacobs ran wild. Eric Cannon cut him off. He dropped him on his head a few times. Jimmy made a big comeback. And Cannon's like one of those guys where when you see him, he's like a poster child for if you want to get past Dragon Gate USA, like get to TNA or WWE, don't look like this.
Yes.
But he's actually a really fucking good worker.
His work is, I saw part of this, I've seen him before, I see the same thing. His work is really good.
Yes.
His look sucks.
Yeah.
Jacobs, I actually noticed here, and I think this is like taped the night after the last pay-per-view, wasn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, so...
I got to mention that in a minute, but go ahead.
It's not like... Well, my point is, it's not like this is a dramatic change, but I noticed it tonight. Jacobs has improved his look tremendously. He's improved everything tremendously. When you remember the skinny guy who came out in the furry boots doing the skinny Bruiser Brody gimmick in the early days of ROH, and you compare it to what he is now, quantum leap forward.
Jimmy Jacobs actually has become such that... When he talks about wanting to eventually win the championship, I have no problem with that.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, like, 2 years ago, you'd have been like, really? Jimmy Jacobs is going to win the Dragon Gate USA title? That'll be the day.
2 years ago, you would think he's perfect as the guy who talks for, what the hell was that group in ROH? With him and Necro.
Oh, yes.
He was perfect as the front man and the voice of the group, as long as he had someone else to fight for him. Now he can fight for himself.
So anyway, I do have the criticism when you mentioned this was taped after the last show. The announcers, I've said this about the announcers before. Part of their job here seems to be to just name moves.
To scream the names of moves.
Not my thing, because it's like, you know, you see a move that you for example, I don't necessarily think they need to call the Trouble in Paradise the Trouble in Paradise, but everyone in the world has seen Kofi Kingston do that move. So when you give it some wacky name, it's kind of like, do we really need another name for that move? But that's a minor point. The bigger issue to me, and it's not really even that big an issue, but they did mention that Jacobs had been in a bloodbath with Jon Moxley last night. And to me, I think they should use the term at the last show.
Sure.
Because when I was watching this match, I had no idea when it took place. And like in my brain, I could think that maybe it took place like 3 weeks ago or something like that. When they mentioned it took place last night...
It was a time warp.
I realized that I watched that show a long time ago, and it was taped. So this match may be like 4 months old.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, when a match is 4 months old, it kind of doesn't seem all that important. So I think they should... And I realize in this match he got busted open, and so they could mention that it was because of the bleeding from the night before. But I think that they should just refer to it as at the last show, as opposed to reminding us that this show is actually really very old. But minor quibble, I like this match a lot. There you go.
We had a very short promo with Ronin, which is Johnny Gargano, Chuck Taylor, and Rich Swann. They talked about how great they were, and they were pissed off that the vending machine ate their dollar. They were acting and dressed like the most annoying kids you went to high school with. When this is over, I wanted to kick their ass, which is good, but I thought I could do it, and that's bad.
We had Akira Tozawa and Jon Moxley against Homicide and BB Hulk. This was my second favorite match on the show. Thanks. I shouldn't say thanks entirely, but nearly entirely to Akira Tozawa, who is, in fact, my new favorite wrestler in the entire fucking world. He is outstanding. It's like he's such that you hope that he's either under contract to either Dragon Gate USA in the USA or Japan or something where WWE won't see him because I just have a feeling that even though like there's a lot about him that's not what they would want, he has got such an incredibly wacky personality that I would see them snatching him in a heartbeat. And he's a great worker, but they wouldn't care about that.
It's irrelevant.
He was outstanding in this match. I loved the Tozawa Hero match. You guys have heard that a billion times. This obviously wasn't that good. But Tozawa is an amazingly wacky, entertaining, awesome wrestler. Jon Moxley is very wacky in a completely different way. Although, like, a year ago, I had no idea who Jon Moxley is, and now I look forward to his matches, so that's a plus. And then it was Homicide and BB Hulk, but we're fine. And it was a tag match. I liked it better than a lot of the other stuff on the show. Tozawa, as noted, was great. Did a lot of near falls, four way, and then BB sadly pinned Tozawa with one of those moves that had a name consisting of several random letters.
I described it as a pump handle pile driver thing.
Sure,
which
I don't care.
Believe Kevin Steen does too, but
doesn't matter.
He hit him with a move.
I love this match.
He pinned him with a water maneuver. I was disappointed when BB Hulk and Homicide came out, they were not dancing. That really would have been awesome.
Well, we got dancing later.
That's true. Maybe they didn't want to steal somebody's thunder. BB Hulk here did about the coolest flippy-do ever, where he took an arm drag and somehow flipped through the air, came down on his feet and turned it, or excuse me, he took a hip toss, flipped through the air and turned it into an arm drag. It was great. I bet if you've seen Dragon Gate before, you've probably seen it a million times. And yeah, then it was nonstop action until Homicide and Moxley were brawling on the floor a lot, which is key here in a second. It left the two Japanese men in the ring, and then, yes, Tozawa was pinned.
Then we had by far the worst thing on the show.
Agreed.
Moxley was cutting a promo, and...
Allegedly.
Yeah.
He had a microphone and was making noise.
The
audio sucked.
I'm not a... I don't know how this stuff works. I mean, I did some stuff with Tony and that sort of thing, but there's a way to pipe the microphone into whatever equipment you're using to record, as opposed to just the sound you record is the sound...
The ambient noise of the arena.
Yes. They're in these buildings with terrible acoustics, and they're cutting promos on these loud mics, and I swear to God, I had absolutely no idea what Moxley said. The only thing I heard was something about 12 years old. Literally the only thing I heard. I presume he was saying that that's how old he was when he first saw Homicide, but I don't know. So, then Yamada was out there, and I believe he hit BB with the title belt.
Oh, is that what he did?
I'm not sure.
I thought Yamato came out and attacked Homicide, and then Homicide fought him off.
Well, that very well could have been.
That's my best guess.
Now, then we had a major issue, which was the TNA-style brawl, where Moxley and...
Homicide
got into this brawl, and I guess to cut to the chase here, what happened was they got in a brawl, Moxley ended up supposedly breaking his arm with a chair, and if that would have taken place in the span of 1 minute, this would have been totally fine. The problem was, first Homicide attacked Moxley, and then Moxley made his own comeback, one-on-one in a fair fight, and was beating up Homicide. And then Homicide made his comeback, and then they started brawling all over the building for, like, 5 minutes. And worse, it's one thing in TNA where they brawl all over the place for, like, 5 minutes longer than they need to get their point across. But here, they actually brawled into a part of the building with no lighting.
Right.
So there were periods where the screen was black. And they brawled and they brawled and they brawled. And then, as noted, they did the arm-breaking thing, which was fine. But it was just, like, the 5 minutes of brawling, much of it in the dark, took such an edge off of this that it really was not possible to care all that much about the injury to Homicide.
This started off like every TNA women's brawl ever, and then it kept going to the point where it was much worse than every TNA women's brawl ever. And then Homicide allegedly got his arm broken, and I was great with this because it meant the brawl was over. Break his other arm, I don't care.
This should have been
this
edited.
This was a pile of shit.
And we had Shingo and Shima, and the main event, I gave this match 3.25. I gave the main event 3.5. I've said my piece on both of them.
Yeah.
If you watch it as a video game, enjoy it. But I could not get into them.
This will actually encapsulate that statement, and it summarized this entire match. There's a spot in this match where Shima hit a DDT that was also a guillotine. He ran this man's head into the mat.
I actually think this might have been a botch, to be honest with you.
It's possible, but here's what happened. He had a DDT that was also a guillotine. He hit two finishers at once. Shingo no-sold both of them and broke out of the guillotine by hoisting Shima into the air for a fisherman buster.
Mm-hmm.
And again, perhaps that was a botch. That is possible. But if it wasn't, it still fit in with the rest of the match. So if you like guys doing a million moves and ignoring a million moves and then then ending, this is your thing. In fact, this is like the anti-Ricky Steamboat rule. Steamboat rules, you never take more than two or three moves in a row without fighting back. The rule in this match was you never hit more than two or three moves in a row without getting cut off. They just went back and forth and back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. And then Shima hit like 8 moves in a row. The last one was a double knee drop, and that was the pinfall. So the heat segment was, in fact, the finish. The live crowd loved this, by the way.
Well, sure. That's exactly what I was saying. So, if you're a fan of Dragon Gate USA, two fine singles matches.
Great. Enjoy.
Then we had the Jacobs promo. And this one I could hear just fine. The ones backstage are fine.
The backstage ones were fine, yes.
Yeah, the ones out in the crowd are
disasters.
Unsuccessful.
Shima also could have in the ring promo, and I don't know what he said.
I have no idea what he said. So Jacobs cuts a promo, and as noted, he very calmly explained that people probably didn't take him seriously as an ex-champion, but that's exactly what he's going to do. He said he was going to win his first ever singles championship. It was not going to be easy. It was not going to happen overnight, but at the end of the road, it was going to happen. This was fucking great.
Yes.
You know what's funny is, like, when Dragon Gate USA first started, and it is, maybe this is just me. Maybe the Dragon Gate, like, the hardcore Dragon Gate fans think differently, but to me, when it first started, it was like, okay, there are going to be a couple of matches with the guys actually from Dragon Gate in Japan, and then the rest of the card is going to be filled up with, like, indie guys, most of whom, at the time, nobody had ever heard of before. And, you know, people were like, oh, I don't know about this idea. It should be all Dragon Gate or whatever. Today, I love all of the non-Japanese Dragon Gate stuff the most.
Mm-hmm.
Jimmy Jacobs, awesome. This six-man here with mostly U.S. indie guys that a year ago I'd never heard of, awesome. And I know all of them now, and I think they're all great. So, I don't know. Thumbs up to the next match. It was Gargano, Chuck Taylor, and Rich Swann against Genki Horiguchi, Austin Aries, and Ricochet. And much to speak of here. First off, I think I could watch Chuck Taylor and Rich Swann wrestle about 200 matches before I got sick of the two of them together. Gargano, you know, quite
he
frankly,
was also there.
Three shows ago, you know, the idea of Johnny Gargano on my TV was just like, who, what, why? Now he's great. Mostly because of the thing with Shima where he told him, you can go to the back now, Johnny Gargano. And his sad fucking promos on the last show. Genki is great.
Genki is great.
And they did spots Aries using his ponytail.
Great. Ricochet is great.
Ricochet is great.
His, by the way, his crimped ponytail.
Yes.
That was amazing.
And then there's Austin Aries, who is still at this point a babyface. For some reason, I don't think that's going to last. But first off, Austin Aries playing a babyface in peril brings me just great joy. Because it's just like, you know, it's just weird. That's all I'm going to say. It's just weird. This is a man...
Not his natural role.
This is a man who, when we went to Phoenix, and we were walking to our cars afterwards, and we were there with Aries, and he was talking about how... I don't think he said his New Year's resolution, but he said something like, I hope to knock out 7 fans this year. You know what I mean? This is a guy who the idea of babyface in peril brings... It is a source of great hilarity. And also the idea that he is going to teach... Who was it? Who's his protege?
Rich Swann?
He's going to teach Rich Swann how to behave in this business.
That was also a great moment, yes.
Fucking begging. It's begging for comedy here. It's begging for some sort of wacky video on the next show. So anyway, they did what they do. Ricochet was awesome. He was awesome with Taylor. He was awesome with everybody, actually. We had a Genki Horiguchi... Rich Swann dance-off.
And it was an amazing dance-off.
Oh, yes, it was.
That was seriously my favorite part of the entire show up to this point.
Yes. They had the heat on Genki for a while.
The high school geeks, as I called them earlier, they were cowardly and acting like cowards.
Yeah.
Great!
It was awesome.
They were heels!
So they got the heat on Genki. Aries made the hot tag. And then they got the heat on him, where, as noted, he played babyface in peril. And then Ricochet made the hot tag, and they did the stuff they do at the finish, which is everybody hitting a big move, doing the big dives. Ricochet did a...
They did a spot here. This was so awesome. Ricochet went for a shooting star. Whoever it was, I think it was Gargano, but he rolled out of the way. So Ricochet landed on his feet, then did a forward roll just to show off. Then he turned around, and he got his teeth super kicked in.
Yes.
I howled with laughter.
It was awesome.
God, that ruled.
Did a round-off double-twisting dive over the top on all the heels. And then finally, after the aforementioned shooting star and super kick. And by the way, his shooting star, I don't know if this is a cliche, but it literally is like he floats. I've never seen a man so effortlessly and calmly leap up into the air and do a backflip while moving forward, a gainer in gymnastics, which is not fucking easy, and then calmly land on his feet.
His athleticism and body control and grace are unbelievable.
So he landed and then got super kicked, and then all the heels triple teamed him
yes.
and killed him dead, And I was sad to see my man go down again, but, you know, who gives a fuck?
This is
like Ricochet's role half the time, is just to be awesome and then be killed.
Yes, this is... And the finish is not coming at a random point. They hit the giant move, then all the heels hit a singles move, and they pinned him. He was overwhelmed by three men and defeated. Great! Everything about this was awesome, except, and I guess this is part of their gimmick, but the heels... We talked earlier about how the announcers just scream out move names, and all of them don't make sense. They're just random words, like Galleria. That could be fucking anything. The Chuck Taylor especially, but I think everyone on his team, but all their moves have silly names. Like Soul Food. I can't take that seriously. And in fact, the winning move here...
Wait a second. Everyone has a stupid name. Attitude Adjustment?
I hate that too.
Oh, I do hate that one.
I do hate that too. But Zigzag, or at least that has his name in it, at least.
Wasn't that my ID, actually?
What's that?
The Zigzag?
It may have been.
Remember when they were talking about, we kept doing the move over and over, and they said, what's Ziggler's finish name? And I think it was me that came up with, I don't know if they stole it from me.
I just remember when we were trying to describe the move.
I guess there's not much of a, there are not many options if your last name is Ziggler.
It does not lend itself to many puns, no.
No.
But the ultimate move in this match here was...
The Zigzag? That's a pretty good one.
Chuck Taylor hit something called the Hertz Donut.
I don't know. I do like the Awful Waffle.
Oh, that's another one.
That's a great name, though. Because you waffle a fucking guy, and it looks awful. Anyway, I'm upgrading this match to 4 stars. Because looking back, I love this fucking
match.
This
was the best match in the show.
So anyway, in conclusion, if you're a fan of Dragon Gate USA, as usual, you really can't go wrong. There was nothing bad on the show, except for the fucking brawl. But that's 5 minutes you can fast forward through. And if you're not a fan of Dragon Gate USA, there's some good stuff on the show, but be prepared. You're going to see some video game matches here in the main event and in the other Dragon Gate singles match. But, you know, you're certainly not going to see bad matches. That's for fucking sure. So anyway, that's DG USA. And let's move into ROH here very quickly. The show from Monday at the Davis Arena in Kentucky.
Yeah. That was great, by the way, just right there. ROH and HDNet opened, and they showed the Louisville skyline, and Hogwood's voice saying, tonight we're in Louisville, Kentucky, home of Ring of Honor for the next few weeks. Two things. On a personal note, as someone who loved OVW more than anything else back in the day, it was just great to see and hear that site. But even outside of the little things that made me happy, it felt like a sports opening. It felt like they were going to a college basketball game or something... Something on ESPN, it brought a level of authenticity to the whole deal.
Yeah. We had Mark Briscoe and Eddie Edwards. Good basic wrestling match. You don't see the Briscoes in a lot of singles matches, obviously, but this was one.
When they do, they're good.
It was totally fine. It was a fun little match, and ended up with Eddie putting him in a half crab, and Mark tried to get the ropes, and so Eddie basically... put his knee on his lower back, which I guess torqued it, and Mark immediately tapped. I mean, immediately, as soon as he moved the knee, he tapped out. And they moved to an all-clean finish format, and it's like... It takes getting used to. Because in WWE, there's no such thing as a clean job with the top guys. So when a guy does a clean job, you immediately assumed he fucked something up.
Yes.
So you gotta get your
brain...
He must
have done something wrong to have a clean finish in this match.
You gotta get your brain in the mode that all of these guys, wins and losses matter, and some guys at this point in time are better than others, and that's, you know, it's like fucking UFC. You're gonna get a finish in every fucking match.
And because...
great!
Just because you lose in a given night doesn't mean you're a geek.
Sure.
Mark Briscoe here wrestled the television champion... They went 12 minutes. It was, if anything, it may have been a little too long. But the point is, he fought the champion tooth and nail for 12 solid minutes. And at the end, he was not the better man on this night. Because the champion is the man. Mark was second best. And that's okay.
Yes.
This is... I just love the show. Cause it is so simple and easy to watch. The champion wrestled. He won. The challenger remains a challenger. Great.
Claudio did his promo about how he had no coffee and he was pissed off. It was great.
It was much better than Brian's giving it credit for. I like where he said the best part about being Switzerland was that there were no angry Puerto Ricans with silly names.
Yes. Homicide was not a real name, he said. He needed a real manly name like Claudio or Chris.
Or Chris. this was a great promo.
Mike Mondo and Grizzly Redwood. And I like Grizzly. He's been on the show. But when I watched this match, I was like, there's no way I'm going to buy Grizzly Redwood beating Mike Mondo. I mean, let's be serious here. And then he didn't.
Yes, that also caught me off guard.
They did a match, and Mike Mondo beat him. So, great!
And in fact, he took most of the match.
One thing with Grizzly, I gotta say, though, is that Grizzly is missing... He's missing something, and I know exactly what it is. He's like a little...
6 inches and 80 pounds?
Well, I mean, for the gimmick he's got. He's like a little guy, but when you're a guy that little, like... He just wrestles like a wrestler. And he's supposed to be a little lumberjack who can hang with the big guys. So I just feel that he needs to have some sort of edge to him. You know what I mean?
Like an axe?
Just some sort of edge where you, for a moment at least, you can believe that, you know, if I made this little fella mad, I might want to do some running. Instead, I kind of watch these matches. It's like, if I made this guy mad, hopefully he comes at me. You know what I mean?
He does, aside from the beard and the suspenders, he wrestles like any other tiny man.
Yeah, he needs some sort of edge to him, and I don't know, not necessarily a heel turn, but he needs something about him to make it at least mildly believable that he's in these matches with these guys, you know what I mean?
Yeah. And if you remember Mike Mondo when he was Mikey in the Spirit Squad, when he was the smallest guy on Raw, he towered over Grizzly.
Oh, yeah.
This conversation is totally relevant.
They had the video they showed before with Haas and Benjamin. We'll get to that in a second. Actually, we'll get to it right now. They killed the Bravado Brothers.
Yes.
And you wrote here, I could not take my eyes off this match for a second. That is true.
Yes.
These guys, I'm not going to give my whole speech. You can listen to the show with Kevin Kelly today. But these guys in this company are just absolutely fucking outstanding.
This is where they belong.
Remember when we hated watching Shelton on WWE?
Watching Shelton was like punishment.
So now it is proof that it was actually WWE and not Shelton. Because he was manly here.
Yeah.
They both were.
Same is true for Charlie, because...
Charlie actually, of the two, I think if I had to fight one of them, I think I would rather fight Shelton, to be honest with you.
Charlie seems... Shelton could kill me. I think Charlie would.
He'd try, yes.
Yeah. So, yes, they were two... They come out, they are two big, scary ass kickers. They did some cool suplexes. The jobbers got some token offense, and then Haas and Benjamin said, fuck this shit. They hit some double teams, and Charlie put on the Haas of Pain and won. A-plus squash. This was tremendous television.
Said that Bob Evans, Mike Bennett, actually, with Bob Evans, were going to debut next week, and I guess we'll see how Mike Bennett does, but I will say this. And I'm not just saying this because Bob is a friend of ours, but the Bob Evans character, like, how do I say this? Like, if someone brought me two books, and one was the life story of Mike Bennett, and one was the life story of Bob Evans.
You're putting the Bob Evans book in your lap and the Mike Evans book on the shelf.
Exactly.
Yes.
I see the Bob Evans character, and it's like, I must know... everything about this man. I need to see like a half-hour TV special on his life.
It is fascinating to see the two of them together because Bob Evans, as on TV on Ring of Honor television, is a cartoon.
Yes.
And Mike Bennett is, frankly, he's a wrestler doing a gimmick I've seen a million times before.
Sure.
He's just a guy.
We'll see what happens in the ring. But right now, Bob Evans is badly overshadowing his man.
Yes.
Then we had Claudio Castagnoli and Homicide. And, again, I was watching this match, and it's like, okay, I know that they're on the clean finish deal here now. How the fuck do you beat Claudio at this point? Because he's just like, he's huge, he's great, he looks awesome, he's a beast.
He's a tag team champion.
Tag team champion. And what they did was a turnbuckle pad came off, Claudio ends up running headfirst into it, hits an ace crusher for the pin, gets beaten, and it worked totally fine.
Yeah. And the key is the Kings of Wrestling were the ones who removed the pad in the first place.
Yeah, so they were foiled by their own... Yes, exactly.
Yes, and yeah, they were... they did not look like geeks. They looked like guys who tried to cheat and it backfired on them, so that's what they got what they deserved. And at the end, he's still a tag team champion. He's still a big, scary guy. He was not buried. He just lost a match to an undefeated man. That's not being buried. You know, it was a good match. It was not great. It was in the 3-star range. But, you know, we saw 4 matches in the show. We saw a great squash, 2 really good matches, And the and Mike Mondo and Grizzly was okay.
All right, let's...
Except for promos. That show ruled.
I want you to talk quickly about Raw. I've already given my review a couple of days ago. Don't waste all of our time here, but...
Ms. Morrison had a hell of a match to open the show. It was sort of funny as it was Falls Count Anywhere, which also meant no DQ. And they were smart. They had Alex Riley interfering from the get-go. Because we always say, if it's no DQ and you're going to run in for the finish anyway, why wait till the finish? Well, they didn't. It was a handicap match until Morrison took Riley out with a knee to the head and they sent him to the back, and that was it for him. But before that point, he's sitting there fighting two men, and one of the announcers, probably Cole, he said it was a great idea for Morrison to pick these stipulations. Really? He picked stipulations where he had to fight two men, and that's a great idea.
Yeah.
So they got rid of Riley. They just had a great match. Miz kicked out of Starship Pain. So after that, Morrison laid him out on a table on the floor. He tried Starship Pain through this table on the floor. Miz moved. Morrison crashed and burned, but he still kicked out. And then he took a skull-crushing finale on the floor and was pinned. The more I think about this, the more I realize how badly this needed to close the show.
This, no shit.
Yeah. And that's, again, I am an expert, everyone. Don't try this at home. So, yes, that was great. I don't need to talk about every segment on here, do I?
No.
Okay. The only other thing that really mattered was the main event angle or main event match was Randy Orton versus Sheamus versus Wade Barrett in a steel cage. Why in a steel cage? Why not? It's Impact. There never was an explanation.
I do have no earthly idea why.
I know the reason why, but it's a bad reason. The reason why it was a cage match was they wanted the finish of Punk offering Wade help and then pulling his armband off. And they couldn't think of a way to do it without putting a cage out there. Which is funny, because the whole idea of a cage, as we've said many times, is to prevent interference in the first place.
Yeah.
So that's what they did. Orton won. He hit an RKO on Sheamus and then just walked out the door. And the problem with having a three-way cage match was that ordinarily with three ways, you can do some three-way spots, and then one guy will bail on the floor. Well, it's a fucking cage, so they couldn't get to the floor. So two guys would start to do some stuff, and then seconds later, the third man would tease climbing out, and they would cut him off, and they just repeated this over and over and over, because what else could they do? So, you know, crowd liked it. Orton won. We get Orton and Orton Miz at Royal Rumble instead of Miz Morrison. So I guess they don't think the Rumble match itself can carry it, and I guess that's the most important stuff in the show. Anything else we have? Cena was not on it.
No.
That actually made me laugh.
He's hired, and now he's on the show.
He said he waited until he was hired to keep him off the show.
I want to talk about SmackDown here, and just as a warning, you might want to fast forward 5 minutes, because I'm about to do a spoiler for Friday's show that's rather major. When I was watching this show, the one thing that stuck out to me more than anything else was that Kofi Kingston badly needs to win the title. Because they did the three-way in the main event, which was Dolph, Kofi, and Swagger. And I have not seen a reaction like this for the secondary title, maybe in fucking years. When Kofi hit that one high cross off the top rope, and everybody, a high cross everybody, a cross body after the top rope, he hit this high cross off the top, and everybody thought for sure it was the finish. And when it wasn't, they were so fucking outraged. They were just outraged at what happened. And when they did the finish where he finally hit his wacky kick on Swagger and surely had the match won, and then Dolph zoomed in, cradled him, grabbed the tights, and stole the belt back, there was like heat that this fucking guy had robbed Kofi. And I was like, they've got to see this. They've got to put the belt on Kofi. Hopefully they don't wait too long or do something goofy, you know what I mean? Well, he won the title on SmackDown this week, and they did a deal where Vicky demanded they restart the match, and then Dolph won again. He's the new champion, and I don't know. I guess we'll see what happens, but, you know, it's the Intercontinental title. Who fucking cares? Well, the answer is this week, people fucking cared. So I was all for this. I thought this was fantastic.
If they do that and it ends up with Kofi winning the belt at the Rumble, that sounds great.
Yeah.
And they have a month to build to that. Or not that long. Actually, they don't have 3 weeks.
So that was great. He's got the title.
The other thing about the show, it was a fine show, but they did Edge and Rey versus Alberto and Kane. That was the top of the hour match, and it was fun. But then they had Drew and Teddy and Kofi in the main event. Or Drew and Teddy. Drew and Swagger and Kofi in the main event. And that's a little thing, but just that they had the Intercontinental title match in the main event of the show made it seem important.
Especially when the world title was in the opener on Raw.
Yes.
It did not seem very important.
That made it seem... Yes.
It was a great match, but it wasn't like it felt like an important fucking match.
Yes. So that's... The IC belt's been a toy for a decade or more now. If you're going to try to make it important, this is a good try.
I will say that Big Show and Dashing Cody Rhodes, as much as I largely abhor this feud, I really enjoyed their little match they had.
They did have a fun... I guess you'd call it squash. Big Show killed him until Cody ran away. That sounds like a squash to me.
Yeah.
He made him bleed when he chopped the chest. He picked him up by the head from the floor over the top rope into the ring. He had a giant backdrop. If I was Cody, I would have run away too.
I never thought I'd say this, but I am intrigued by the Drew McIntyre storyline. Largely because they're obviously doing it to fuck with his wife. But
but hey.
But I am intrigued. It's like, you know... It's just kind of and maybe I'm hoping they will actually follow through, and they won't. I don't know. But it's like, it's something interesting. You know what I mean? Drew McIntyre is going to be a good guy. That's
Drew McIntyre's
New Year's resolution.
Man. Yes.
Totally. So he can fuck Kelly. You know what I mean?
Actually, fucking Kelly would be a great New Year's resolution.
Well, sure. That's
I
what,
resolve
that's
to
what
fuck
it
Kelly
is.
Kelly, yes.
That's what it is.
Drew wrestled Trent Beretta, and they did a spot where Trent went for a giant dive, and Drew stepped out of the way, and Beretta crashed and burned on the floor. He actually did this move as safely as it could possibly have been done.
Yeah.
Basically, it was a giant forward roll.
He did a giant dive roll over the top.
Yeah. It is, again, and I actually mean this.
I would never have done it, don't get me wrong.
Yeah, don't
but,
try this at home.
But yeah.
But
if
you try
it
at home,
try and do it like this.
And it comes out like this, you will probably be okay. So I suspect, you know, Trent's tag team partner was fired not long ago. I suspect that he was willing to do anything. To anything they asked of him to make an impression, he was happy to do, and he pulled it off here, so don't do this every week.
And then finally we had, I wanted to talk about Lay Cool, Beth, and Natalia, and not really a lot to say about it, except that this should be, like, by far the best feud that you could possibly do in WWE involving women, and I wouldn't say it's bad, but it's just, like, nothing special.
Well,
and I guess for some reason that surprises me.
Part of the problem, a big part of the problem, is that the announcers are completely bored by the entire thing themselves.
Yeah.
They were distracting themselves with completely other random topics, including, and I realize it was a pot kettle black thing here, but Matt Stryker started talking about his cats.
Well.
Cats are great, everyone.
I can't blame him.
And it actually amuses me to know that Matt Stryker's cats are named Loverboy Dennis and Beautiful Bobby. That's actually fantastic trivia right there. But the fact that they were talking about cats while there was a match going on makes the match seem less important. Whereas when we talk about cats, it's the highlight of the show. So, yeah.
Of course it is. We should get a cat webcam for their new cat tree.
Your cat tower. It is taller than you. It is not quite taller than me. But the top level is basically at eye level. I would have to stand on tiptoes to see the very top of this tower.
Mm-hmm.
It's ridiculous.
It's pretty awesome.
You need about 8 more cats to fill that out.
All right, I'm going to open up the phone lines here.
Oh, boy.
And I realize it's 1:18 when we're starting the lightning round.
West Coast time, everyone.
West Coast time.
It's 4 in the morning in New York.
4 in the morning in New York, so I'm thinking we're probably not going to get a lot of calls.
Brilliant.
But
that'll make it even better.
I'm going to change the lightning round to 12 minutes because I want to finish
this. We're already giving up.
I want to finish this show off in exactly an hour. Or so. So it's a 12-minute lightning round, and while I wait to see if anybody is actually going to call us, I am going to play a song, which actually is going to give everybody a good idea of why I thought the prediction show was so bad. So hold on a minute. Let me give this a shot. It is our annual 2011 prediction show. Let's get the first caller here on the line. What is your prediction for 2011? You're on the air. Let's try this again. Maybe pushing the wrong one. You emailed me earlier today, didn't you?
No, I didn't, actually.
Oh, really? You're on the prediction show? No, you're not. You're on the 2011 Christmas show. I'm sorry, the prediction show. The show started as a train wreck, but I think we're going to be doing all right now. I think I've got everything under control, so let's get back to the phones. You've been watching NXT this season, I presume?
Well, I am the reviewer for the site.
That is true. I'm sorry, Emerson. And he also says we will get through 2010 without anyone under the age of 16 being murdered by... See, that's why we don't do this here on this show anymore. You emailed me today, didn't you?
No, I don't think that was me.
Oh, really? Are you there, Lance? Live radio here, everybody. It's the prediction show. Who is this? What is your prediction for 2011?
Hey.
Hello?
Hey, it's James.
James, what's going on? Let's go back to the phones. Nope. Well, Ed, that is a fine prediction. I actually expected your prediction to be something like, I predict that in 2011 I will continue to have a better show than Brian.
Well, I don't have to state that. I mean, that's a known fact.
How apropos that was. All right, let's try
this. I'm sure the other 55 minutes of that show were great.
Sure. Let's go to the phones. You're on the air. Who is this and where are you calling from?
Hey, Brian and Vinny. It's Ryan from Smith, California. How are you two doing tonight?
Not too bad. What's going on?
I just wanted to see if either you knew the details of the nature of Shelton and Charlie Haas' contract with ROH. I caught their squash match on Monday.
Wasn't it great?
It was probably one of the best things I've seen in a long time, and I really hope they stick around somewhere where they're going to be used for a while, as opposed to WWE, and I have no faith in TNA. And also, I wanted to see what your opinion is, or I should say Vinny's opinion is, on the CM Punk angle on Monday. Thanks a lot, and I'll get off the line.
All right, thanks very much for the call. I don't know if they're under contract, but I know that given their speech, they're around for the long haul. At least, I guess, until maybe WWE sees it and signs them. But yeah, they're awesome, and they're around at least through the iPay-per-view, and hopefully for the rest of the year as well. So, Vinny wants to know about you and Punk.
I think CM Punk is the best promo in WWE right now. I think he's a fresh face on top for John Cena to feud with. He's talk about being in the right place at the right time. He's the guy who needs someone to feud with, and John Cena is available and has feuded with everyone, and it's going right into WrestleMania. So I think he's fortunate, but he's they say fortune is what happens when preparation meets opportunity. So he's the right guy in the right place, and it's great for him. And I enjoyed it.
We have no callers in the line right now.
Disaster. Should we go talk about the cat tower again?
Maybe. I did notice that I've got three lines here.
Are they all open?
Stealing from Art Bell, of course.
I was going to say, do you have a West of the Rockies line?
I have an East of the Rockies line. I have a West of the Rockies line. And then I have the International line, where basically that just means anyone can call. So, really.
So we have a global audience that doesn't want to talk to us.
Well, I mean, the Eastern line, I mean, who's awake right now?
Freaks.
And that leaves the Western line, which, quite frankly, it is 1:30 in the morning on the West Coast.
Really, we are hoping for our UK contingent to come through.
Leave only the international callers.
It's mid-morning, I believe, right about now.
Maybe I should have put this up a little bit earlier tonight.
Maybe next time. How many more minutes do we have to kill?
Well, we got about... I got 7 minutes left here on the clock, so...
It's a lot.
The cat tower is pretty cool, though.
Where did you get the cat tower?
We went to this place in Canyon Park, which had these cat towers that were very expensive and not very nice. And then we went to PetSmart, which had some nicer cat towers, but still nothing that caught our fancy. And then we finally went to Petco, which had, I guess, the higher-end cat towers. And, we bought this one, and the cats love it.
Did you put it together yourself?
No, actually, I was going to, but they didn't have any in the box. They only had
a floor model.
Actually, only had like three floor models, all of which were constructed. So we shoved it into the vehicle and drove it here.
Okay, actually, this is more fascinating than the tower itself. I've seen your vehicle.
Well, we took off the top layers. We just unscrewed them.
I see.
They could be unscrewed.
I see.
So I did construct it, basically, but we...
Well,
we,
you did 10% of the construction.
We came home, we put the buggers in their room upstairs and shut the door, and then we went and we put it together, and then I turned my iPhone into a video camera, which you can do. Technology nowadays is crazy. And I let them out, and we filmed them walking down the stairs and looking at it in a very curious manner. And very, very slowly scaling it. And then within 12 minutes, they were going batshit crazy on it. So it was a fun day.
It's has many levels of ramps and platforms on which they can climb and
jump.
Hold
on, we got a caller here on the line.
Holy shit.
You're on the show. Who is this and where are you calling from? Oh, my God.
Wow, that was loud.
And people wonder why I don't do these shows anymore.
I shouldn't hit the desk that hard, everybody.
I just presume that guy was so intimidated by us.
Talking to the great Brian Avini.
This coward that he was caught off guard and was forced to hang up.
So this cat tower has many levels of platforms and ramps on which the cats can jump and climb and make their way up the thing. And the first time I actually saw a cat scale it, because when I got here, there's one cat on like the second highest platform, and the other cat was just running around, hanging out. And then the second cat decided, I want up on that platform too. And it walked up to the thing, and rather than use any of the aforementioned ramps and platforms, it went to the pole itself and climbed the thing like Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm.
This seemed like the hardest possible way to get up there, but that's what the cat did.
Yes.
And you know what? It worked, so hey.
Snorky, the little one, doesn't like to jump up onto anything. Like, she'll jump down, but she won't jump up.
Mm.
And so, like, for example, we've got, they're in their little room, there's the washer and dryer and the counter, and she won't jump up there. But we've got an ironing board that leans against the counter. It's like in between the counter and the washing machine, so it won't fall down. It's permanently at this angle. And she scales it like Spider-Man. That's how she gets up on top every night. It's quite adorable, actually. But we've actually got another caller here on the line. You're on the Brian and Vinny Show. Who's this?
This is Matt from New Hampshire. How are you doing, Brian?
What's happening, Matt?
Isn't it like 4 in the morning there, 4:30? No.
It is. It's 4:30 in the morning right now, and I'm all gimmicked up on somas and shit.
Really?
Excellent.
And you? Why are you up at 4:30 in the morning gimmicked
on
up?
On somas.
I saw on the website that the Brian and Vinny Show is taking calls now, and I figured, man, I should call in.
Well, it's your lucky day.
Thank God you did.
It's my lucky day. I'm really happy that I called. And how's the show going so far, guys?
Well, actually, we were getting no calls, so it's our lucky day as well.
Oh, awesome. So I'm saving the show a little bit here with the call.
That's true.
You absolutely are saving the show.
Awesome.
Well, what's happening out there in New Hampshire? What's on your mind?
Well, there's nothing happening up here in New Hampshire except a lot of snow. And I hate the snow.
No wonder he's gimmicked up.
We actually, it snowed here.
I have rheumatoid arthritis, so.
Oh, that sounds like it sucks.
Yeah.
It snowed here like a week ago, and seriously, like a week ago, and it has not snowed since, but none of the snow has gone away.
Yeah.
And then finally tonight it began to rain.
That. Yeah.
So hopefully it's going to be gone shortly.
Finally the snow's starting to go away up here a little bit, and then it started snowing again earlier tonight, but what can you do? All four seasons up here in the Northeast.
How much snow did you get?
The blizzard, you mean with the blizzard last week?
Yeah.
We right here in my area, we got about a foot, a little over a foot.
That's quite a bit.
A little over a foot of snow. Oh, it sucks.
Yeah, we're bitching about a quarter of an inch out here, actually.
We got like 4 inches.
A quarter of an inch?
Well,
a quarter of an inch, Brian?
Vinny got a little Vinny got a little bit more.
You know, actually, it is amazing how...
I think it was my fault I only got a half inch.
The difference in snow, I was at my buddy Jim's house, which is in Bothell. It's in the same town. And they got so much snow that Bothell actually sent a plow to their street.
Hmm.
Which I've never heard of a snow plow in Bothell.
Well, here's part of the issue with the snow around here. Because it's January, and like the sun doesn't go directly overhead, you know what I mean? It like goes over to the side and around. Mm-hmm. So like there's certain streets that like never see any sunlight.
Yes.
And so the snow never melts there. But like the sun actually hits our driveway and melts the snow. Mm. But there are places that I drove that I was like, Jesus Christ, it's ice here.
Yeah, so I can say the same thing with my house, luckily. When the sun does shine, it will help. It will help take it down a bit. I'm in a decent area, I guess. But, snow does suck, and I'm very happy. What is it? Fuckthesnow.com, I believe, right?
Yeah, fuckthesnow.com, I believe, still works just fine.
Yep, it does. That's a fantastic website right there.
Now, so, before we let you go here, what brings you... I mean, why are you still awake? What time do you normally sleep?
I have an erratic sleeping schedule, a very erratic sleeping schedule. You know, I got my issues, you know.
Sure.
As I mentioned in the beginning.
Well.
You know, I have an erratic sleeping schedule, I guess is all I can say.
I love
the show. I love all the audio and everything you got to say, too. It gets me through.
Well, thanks very much for the call. We appreciate it. Get a little bit of sleep, and hope all goes well. We've actually got someone else here on the line. You're on the Brian and Vinny Show. Who's this and where are you calling from?
This is Greg from New Jersey.
Another East Coaster.
All you East Coasters up at 4:30 a.m., you're crazy.
And I went to the gym at 3 a.m. too. You'd be proud.
Okay, you're a maniac. You actually terrify me.
How about that?
What time do you go to bed?
No one's there.
What? Yeah, what time do you normally go to sleep?
About 2 a.m.
Wow.
You're
a little past your bedtime here today, buddy.
Does not compute.
School does not start up until next week. There is no bedtime.
I see.
Now it's all falling into place.
We have like the insomniac line here on the Brian and Vinny Show every Tuesday night.
Sleep deprivation line.
Yeah. So what's on your mind?
I was curious as to how Buddy Wayne was doing.
He's doing fine. I got a Christmas card from him and his wife and his bugger, who is now in, I guess he's now in preschool. So, you know, they're having a holiday season. Buddy doesn't like to leave the house too much. I've been trying to get him over here for a long-ass time, but hasn't come over yet. But I was over there a couple of months ago, and things seem to be going well, from what I've determined.
Is he still training people?
As far as I know, yeah.
And why no Buddy Wayne on F4W?
There really is no reason, except that, like, when he got his heart surgery, he took, like, several weeks. I thought he was going to take several weeks to recover. He was actually trying to get out, you know, much quicker than that. And then, you know, I don't think that he wanted to do a lot of shows after that. I've sent him emails, and
he just
like,
has better things to do with his time.
Well, no, I'll send him an email that'll say, like, you know, it'll ask, like, a couple of questions or this and that. And then at the bottom, it'll add, let me know if you want to do a show. And he'll answer every question but not acknowledge doing the show. So I think he just doesn't want to do the show. He's had his quota of shows for the last several years.
I see. Well, yeah. I'm glad I got the scoop.
Yeah, there's no real scoop. I know everybody wants some sort of scoop or some drama, but there isn't one.
Got to ask a tough question.
Well, that's what I'm here for.
We don't. Why?
Thank you.
All right, anything else?
No, that's it. Have a great night, guys.
Enjoy Jersey.
Yeah, get to bed there, young man. Yeah, that was pretty good. That ends the lightning round.
It turned up big time at the end.
It flew by. Maybe we should wait and take one more.
You want to see if we get one?
Well, let me.
I will say doing a caller segment is much easier when people do call in.
It really is. It'll be. I think this will be a success during the daytime when I bring this back. If it fucking works at night, it's going to work during the day. Although I will say one thing that I have noticed when we've done calls on the Brian and Vinny Show, it is very much like the old days of Art Bell on Coast to Coast, because you definitely get a different sort of caller late at night.
Yes.
Like, in the daytime, normal people call, and they'll want to talk about politics and bullshit like that.
Mm-hmm.
But at night, you get dudes gimmicked up and insomniacs.
The freaks come out at night.
Sure, exactly.
I just had a brilliant idea. We're doing this backwards. We don't invite people to call us. We ambush people and call them.
Vinny, that show would last.
Can you imagine if we called Lance Storm right now?
Oh, yeah.
At 2:30 in the morning in Calgary?
That'd get over. All right, let's take another call. You're on the Brian and Vinny Show. Who's this and where are you calling from?
Hey, hello. This is Marcus from Austria.
Oh, my God.
Marcus
Austria.
From Austria.
What's happening?
It's 10:30 a.m. here. I just woke up because I'm still on my holiday, and I thought I checked the news on the Observer front page, and I saw you're taking calls, so I'm calling right now.
We left this open just for you.
Oh, awesome. That's great. Well, did you already talk about the Strikeforce heavyweight tournament coming up?
We actually have not. I don't know what has been up on the front page yet, but I can give everybody a little bit of news. This is actually breaking news right here, thanks to your call. The brackets that everybody is discussing and breaking down, I'm not sure those are the brackets. I was given word that there's Strikeforce sent out a press release. Oh, no, actually not Strikeforce, Showtime, I believe, sent out the press release, and it had brackets in it, and everybody was talking about these brackets and how weird they were, and how, you know, everybody thought it was going to be Fedor and Overeem in the finals. That's what they were working towards, but the brackets would have had the meeting in, like, the semifinals. So, as it turns out, I don't think that the brackets that were announced today are actually the official brackets, but I have not seen official brackets yet, so I guess we have to wait till tomorrow to find out what the hell's going on.
I see, because I was thinking they would have their heads up their ass if they really went for either Fader over him in the semifinals or Fader and over Doom in the semifinals.
Yeah,
I will just say that doesn't it sound like Strikeforce, not so much to put out crappy brackets, but to leave the possibility open that these brackets are out there maybe official and no one's quite sure.
Yeah.
Sounds like Strikeforce.
Yeah, that's the story in that the brackets were absurd. But, like, usually when you see, like, a Raw rating, like, if a Raw rating came out that was a 1.5, everybody would assume that it was a mistake. But when Strikeforce came out with these wacky brackets, people just started discussing them, like, what the hell are they doing and why? Which, I don't know what that says about Strikeforce, but...
Or even more, just the fact that these may not be the official brackets, but somehow people have gotten it in their heads that they are.
Yes.
Were UFC to do a tournament, if there were no brackets, people would know there are no brackets. And if brackets came out, everyone would know these were the brackets.
All right, quiet down, Vinny. I want to ask him one last question here. What would you say is the percentage chance, in your opinion, caller, of this Strikeforce tournament actually going off without a hitch?
Well, the first thing I thought when I saw the brackets with Fader in the semis, I thought, well, maybe Coker is just... thinking that his people won't go through with the tournament anyway, so he will try to get the big match out as early as he can because he's not sure that Fader will even fight three times.
Which is not a bad theory, but that begs the question.
I'd love to see it going forward with the UFC heavyweight division in the shape it is right now, but I don't hold my breath to see it actually finish.
Yeah, Mike Coughlin, I want to thank you very much for the call this early in the morning. Mike Coughlin actually had the best line when he said that the Strikeforce tournament will surely end with two losers in the main event. And I cannot say that is...
He's not wrong.
That is an outrageous prediction right
no.
there. All right, we're going to set up one last song. And then if we get a final caller, we'll wrap the thing up with them. But if not, we'll... We'll just, you know, I don't
no,
know.
Brian, tell me.
We'll just wrap it up.
All right.
Here we go.
I'm out here tonight to challenge you.
Didn't we play this one and it was just the rapping?
The beat in the background is cool. The rap, it's not rapping, though. It's just a promo over a cool beat.
Yeah. All right. Let's play Kennedy No Good. And then we'll...
Sounds promising.
We'll wrap it up.
Ladies and gentlemen, Mr.
I gotta see this dipshit on Impact now.
He failed to crawl to the corner and tag his partner.
What the fuck was he waiting for?
I don't know. Learn to work!
And now I see how you really are. You're no good, you're no good, you're no good.
Ken Kennedy.
You're no good.
How in a tag match can you fuck up the hot tag?
You're no good, you're no good, you're no good.
Mr. Kennedy.
It's no good.
Sean goes to clothesline him outside, and Kennedy doesn't go. So Sean's like, I'm going to get this fucker out of this ring. And he grabbed him, and you can hear Sean just going, and I thought, boy.
It'll be easy forgetting you. You're no good, you're no good, you're no good.
Jesus Christ, Kennedy.
You're no good.
Fine song, that one right there. Well, everybody, that's it. The lightning round went off without a hitch. Maybe we'll have to do that more often. It actually flew by, to be honest with you. So anyway, I guess I'll give it a shot later on this week. We're going to do an hour of open line phone calls.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it's probably going to be Friday in the daytime, everyone. So
talk about politics.
Be prepared. No fucking politics. No politics and preferably no religion. But other than that... And you know, hopefully some wrestling and MMA, largely. But anyway, that's later on this week, so we'll tell you more about it in a couple days. Till then, we'll talk to you after a while.
Adios.